This is News and Notes. I'm Farai Chidea. Who is the most tech-savvy presidential candidate, and how can you find the right online network that suits your lifestyle and ambitions? News and Notes tech guru Mario Armstrong is here with the scoop. Hey, Mario.
Hey, Farai. How are you?
I am great. So earlier this week, actor and Republican presidential candidate Fred Thompson visited a Dell computer manufacturing facility in Austin, Texas. And he's the first 2008 candidate to visit a Dell facility in the States. He makes the point that this is the only major computer manufacturer that's left in the U.S. manufacturing. He's not the only candidate, though, to make technology a part of his campaign. So who do you think is among the most tech-savvy of the candidates and why?
Oh, that's a tough question. I mean, you're seeing a lot of different things come from all the different candidates. All of them understand and have been leveraging the internet to really push for grassroots campaigns. Some are doing it better than others. As it relates to technology policy, though, and understanding where we stand as a country and how we need to stay competitive and how we may need to set up policies in individual states and cities that we could have these economic incentives to make sure that technology innovation is rewarded in this country. That's where you start to see maybe a little bit of a difference as to whether or not that's sitting high enough on anyone's agendas. But I can tell you this. I was really impressed with Fred Thompson visiting Dell. He was the first to visit Dell at their headquarters, at their manufacturing plant, which Dell is probably the only personal computers manufacturer that still has manufacturing in the U.S. They still have about three manufacturings in the U.S. And they said they wanted to introduce the presidential candidates to not only Dell and the process of innovation and manufacturing, but also to talk about the technology industry and what are some of the changes, what are things happening with the environment, how can companies that produce products like these technology products be more e-friendly, and what are some of the policies that should support that, but also to hear from the candidates. What do the candidates need to know about this technology industry, and how do we grow more Dells or more opportunities? So it was really interesting to kind of see that the media didn't really play up on this too much, and that's also an indication of whether or not a presidential candidate may start to pay more attention to the technology sector if the media doesn't really cover it. So, but I can tell you this, Barack Obama's website has to be, out of all of the websites so far, the most solid, interactive, and engaging site. In fact, he's basically created a social network on his own, allowing people to build their own profiles, their own blogs, their own photos, and it's called mybarackobama.com. So he's really, I don't know who's on his staff that's really coming up with these great ideas, but they have been the most forward-thinking, from my standpoint, as to how to leverage the internet for campaigning.
So you mentioned social networking. There, I mean, I have LinkedIn, Facebook, MySpace, Friendster,
yes,
and
on.
Tribe. And I'm really sick of all these logins. It's driving me crazy. And yet you make the argument there are more, yet more. Tell
there
us about
are more.
That.
Yes, there are more. This has all been for you so far. Social networking has had its advantages and benefits for making connections, finding old friends, maybe making career changes and things of that nature. Now we're focusing on the kids with websites like MB. So this is being geared towards middle school and younger for their social network. I guess they need one too. And then grandparents. You're not left out of the social networking scene. There's been a few websites out there that have been kind of deemed Facebook with wrinkles, if you will. And one of those is called Boomer Town, and another one's called Eons. So everyone is being approached with this. But here's where it's going, Farai. It's going more niche, and it's going to be more exclusive. I think the catch-all sites, the MySpaces, the Facebooks, well, Facebook may be different because they create applications and allow people to create applications. But other catch-all social networking sites really are going to have to start to define special niche interests better. So I think websites like StreetCred.com or even there's a website for black professional business women called Sistapreneurs.com, and it's a solely created social network on their own. And there's a website where people can now create their own social networks. Like Farai, you and of yourself are a social network. You could create one by going to a website called Ning.com, N-I-N-G, and actually create your own social network. So we're now giving people and organizations more power to create their own communities. I think we'll start seeing more exclusivity and more niche-driven social networking websites.
Well, I want to move on to something else a little bit more serious. There is some of the biggest telecommunications companies reportedly working with the White House. They want impunity from lawsuits filed because the companies helped U.S. intelligence agencies with warrantless surveillance. Now, that's a lot on the plate. Tell us a little bit more about what's going on with that.
Yeah, right now you're finding a campaign that's really involving some of Washington's most prominent lobbying firms and law firms, and this issue has really taken on some new urgency. And really, they've been talking about wiping out all potential lawsuits that any of these telecommunications companies may have pending against them, as it relates to any of the wiretapping with their participation with the White House. And so this is really a blanket statement that's saying we want all lawsuits, not just ones specific to specific areas dealing with wiretapping or from a specific date, but anything that's dealing with wiretapping in general, we want to be removed from. And the industry, the telecom industry, says they say that there's a real concern that they could actually go bankrupt with the amount of lawsuits that it's pending against them. The Electronic Frontier Foundation, on the other hand, says, look, this is obviously a way that they are trying to kill the EFF's goal of really going after, having lawsuits be able to go after these telecommunications companies. You know, it's really just, it's one of those things where I don't, you have a lot of people that are lined up that work in the telecom industry right now that have either had some connectivity to Bush in the current administration or the former Bush as president. And some of these folks are the head of some of these telecom companies. I really don't know how this is going to shake out. I can tell you it's not good for the individual.
Well, Newsweek called this the secret lobbying campaign your phone company doesn't want you to know about. It sounds as if there's a lot of money running through this, that the telecoms are spending big bucks on lawyers, lobbyists, et cetera. You mentioned the EFF, Electronic Frontier Foundation. Is it a battle with two evenly matched sides, or is it kind of a given that the telcos are going to win?
Yeah, that's what scares me about this. I really would like to be optimistic and keep the glass half full. That's how I think, and that's how I like to look at things. But in this case, I don't think we have that type of hope. And I think we have to really look at this from a realistic standpoint and say that if I had to place my bets, that we would not be winning this. We, meaning the consumers, are not going to win out, or the EFF, I don't think, will win out on this particular thing. I think there's too much money. I think there's too much leverage. And that's been part of the problem with the telecommunications infrastructure of this country.
There have been, as people have been debating wireless, warrantless wiretapping, there has been this question of how focused it is. Is it something that you're only going to get targeted if you have associations with terrorists, or is it in broad strokes? What does this say about that aspect of the debate?
Yeah, and this is where it gets a little scary, because right now it doesn't really speak to where that criteria lies. Like, how exactly are you defined as someone that is wiretapped? And what does that mean? And we're just talking wiretapping at this point, which has really been about the phone conversations. But don't forget, these media companies, or I call them media companies, these telecommunications companies are migrating into media companies. So that means we're also talking about email being tapped as well. So it's not just what we're saying on the phones. It's also what we're typing in our text messages and email messages. But you're absolutely right. I still haven't been able to find anything. If anyone out there can point me to the right direction, please show me, because I can't find anything that really specifies the criteria as to how you fall into being wiretapped.
All right. Well, Mario, thanks for the update.
That's a scary. Yeah, it's a scary reality. My pleasure, Farai.
All right. Mario Armstrong, News and Notes tech contributor. He covers technology for member stations WYPR and WEAA in Baltimore. And he spoke with us from the studios of the Baltimore Sun.